This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be looking back at last night's Champions League action. A win for Tottenham over in Belgrade, but a draw and a pretty eventful game over in Atalanta, or over in Milan, actually, for Manchester City. So we'll be looking back at all of last night's Champions League action, talking about the Europa League as well. Strangely, Arsenal were in action over in Portugal. So we'll be looking back at that Europa League game and also looking ahead to tonight's Europa League action. Wolves are playing Slovan Bratislava. Manchester United are playing Partizan Belgrade. We'll also be talking about a little bit about Aston Villa. How many Villa players will be in the England squad that's announced in the next hour? Jack Grealish and Tyrone Mings, will they take their place in that squad? Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so we want to hear from you on this Thursday afternoon. So let's look back at last night's Champions League action. On Tuesday night, Liverpool won 2-1 at home against Genk, and it was a pretty nutty game on Bonfire Night. Certainly fireworks going off at Stamford Bridge as Chelsea drew 4-4 at home against Ajax. Two more English clubs in action last night over in Italy. At the San Siro, no, Manchester City were not playing AC Milan or Inter Milan. They were playing Atalanta. And it was if we want to use the cliche, it was a game of two halves. And it most certainly was that. In the first half, Manchester City dominated from really the first whistle to the last. Second half, the game completely turned around. Raheem Sterling had given City the lead inside the opening 10 minutes with a really well-worked team goal, with him, Bernardo Silva and Gabriel Jesus all contributing towards Sterling netting the first. City all over their opponents. Gabriel Jesus did have the opportunity to make it 2-0 from the spot, but it was a pretty dreadful penalty that wasn't even on target. Went past the post. Seemed to look down at the pitch as if to blame that. I think the reason why you didn't score was because it was an awful penalty rather than the pitch not being so great. From that moment, the game completely changed. At half-time, Manchester City were forced into a change. Edison, who is a doubt for the mammoth game on Sunday at Anfield between Liverpool and Manchester City, no real sign of it in the first half, but he did go off to be replaced by Claudio Bravo, who then proceeded to concede just a matter of a few minutes into the second half. Mario Pasalic, who is on loan from Chelsea at Atalanta, gave the Italian side hope, equalised. And then, obviously, the chaos ensued in the final 10 minutes when Claudio Bravo came flying out of his goal in his usual style and was then sent off for a tackle on Josip Iličić, who went down. Now, I've seen the incident a number of times, and I'm not entirely convinced there is really any contact. However, what I would say is that if Iličić doesn't jump, if he just keeps running normally, he would be taken out. So there's a case of should a free kick still be given if there's not really much contact, if they're just jumping to get out of the way of inevitable contact? I don't know. But he was sent off. Then chaos ensued for the next 6 or 7 minutes as City scrambled to find who was going to go in goal. Because, as we mentioned, Edison went off. Then the backup goalkeeper on the bench, Claudio Bravo, is then sent off. So it had to be an outfield player. Up steps Kyle Walker off the bench. He replaced Riyad Mahrez to go in goal. Short sleeves, which you don't see very often from goalkeepers, although from Claudio Bravo you do. Maybe that's a sign of things that, for a goalkeeper wearing short sleeves, you're not very good. But Kyle Walker goes in goal, and his first job is to keep out a free kick from just outside the penalty area. Now, it goes on target and he doesn't exactly catch it particularly well. He spills it, manages to flop on it. It would have been absolutely hilarious had it gone through his legs in his first moment in goal for Manchester City. Would have been interesting. But City did hold on in the end, really, for 1 point. They seemed reasonably satisfied with it. It means that they are on 10 points at the top of Group C after four games. Dinamo Zagreb and Shakhtar Donetsk, who played out a pretty enthralling 3-3 draw yesterday, they're both on 5. City are at home to Shakhtar in game week 5, so you'd imagine City will easily not only progress, but progress as the group winners. But concerns for Pep Guardiola ahead of Sunday's game that Ederson is a big doubt for that game, having gone off at half time. Just one final thing on Manchester City. Pep Guardiola has backtracked on his comments that he made the other day. If you remember, after City beat Southampton 2-1 on the weekend, he made comments about Liverpool forward Sadio Mane, claiming that sometimes he's a special talent, sometimes he dives. Now, he's backtracked and said that he didn't mean that, and Jurgen Klopp's actually just done an interview with Sky, actually, that's been broadcast over the last 20 minutes, saying how he has no problem with Pep Guardiola, he has the utmost respect, and this is all kind of behind him, and he doesn't have any issue with it. I sort of think Pep Guardiola is quite clearly quite an intellectual man, quite clearly has his head switched on. He knew exactly what he was doing. That wasn't a heat of the moment thing. He's far more calculated than that. And he knows from his time back at Barcelona with his battles with Jose Mourinho at Real Madrid. He knew exactly what he was saying when he said that. That wasn't a heat of the moment emotional thing to say. He made a point of talking about Sadio Mane so that it is in the back of a referee's mind when we come to Sunday. I don't buy this that he backtracks and he didn't mean it. He quite clearly did, and it is all part of the mind games, and it's just a case of if you're the person being targeted, it's about just completely shutting that out, ignoring it rather than being affected by it. But some interesting comments. But Jurgen Klopp has said that he has the utmost respect for Guardiola and for Manchester City, and that he has no problem with what's been said. It's been put to one side, put to bed, and there's no issue with it ahead of that mammoth game that we'll be talking more about, obviously, tomorrow as we build up to the Premier League weekend. It's Liverpool against Manchester City at Anfield on Sunday. Liverpool 6 points clear at the top. In the other game involving an English side last night, Tottenham went over to Belgrade. It's quite a vociferous, hostile atmosphere out in Belgrade, but Tottenham did run out quite easy. Winners are winning 4-0 at Red Star Belgrade. Giovanni Lo Celso scoring his first goal for the club in what was a really quite wacky sequence of events. If you haven't seen Tottenham's first goal, go and look at it on YouTube, because Tottenham have about five attempts in about 12 seconds to score. It hits the post, it hits the bar, it rebounds off defenders, it's flying around the penalty area like a pinball, and eventually Lo Celso scores. Heung-min Son scored twice, and Christian Eriksen scored near the end of the game to give Tottenham a 4-0 win. Credit to Tottenham, because not an easy place to go. Going out to Belgrade in that type of an environment is not easy on what was not a great pitch quality, especially what the Premier League players are used to. And it's their first away win in any competition since the beginning of May, when they went to Ajax in the semi-finals and won 3-2 there to get through to the final. However, despite scoring four, they looked all over the place at the back. So suspect that at 1-0 and 2-0, Tottenham could have easily conceded goals. Belgrade had two really good opportunities where there was a one-on-one that all he needed to do was not hit it straight at Paolo Gazzaniga, and that's exactly what he did. Another from Raju van der Parra hit the post. Interesting fact for you, Raju van der Parra, the half-brother of Jorginho Wijnaldum, if you didn't know, hit the post, which could have completely changed that game. So And you look at that Tottenham defence that started last night, Juan Foyt at right-back, Davinson Sanchez and Eric Dier at centre-back with Danny Rose at left-back. It was all over the place, and it could have been a very different story. Yes, credit to Tottenham for scoring four goals away from home, especially in a place like that, which isn't easy, even though Belgrade aren't one of the kind of European giants. But they looked all over the place defensively, and it could have been a very different story. But it now does put Tottenham in a pretty decent position to qualify from Group B. Bayern Munich are obviously top. Four wins from four, 12 points there on. Tottenham are in second on 7 points. Red Star on three, Olympiacos on one. In game week five, Tottenham are at home against Olympiacos. You'd imagine they would win, and so that would send Tottenham through. So it does look like they will go through. Talking of Bayern Munich, could in game week six on December 11th, when Bayern Munich host Tottenham, could Arsene Wenger be in the dugout at the Allianz Arena? Obviously, Niko Kovac has gone from Munich. It had been rumoured for quite a while. Even last season, there was signs of discontent and grumblings of discontent amongst the Bayern Munich faithful, that the fans in the hierarchy. Kovac lost his job after a 5-1 drubbing by Frankfurt. Munich have been I think one of the surprises about how good they've been this season. So they're 4 wins from 4, and Wenger could be in line for the job on a temporary basis to the end of the season, when potentially the likes of the Ajax manager Erik ten Hag and the Bayern Munich and the PSG manager Thomas Tuchel could become available. So Wenger could be in charge, his first job since leaving Arsenal obviously 18 months ago, could be his first job back, and he could be lining up for Bayern Munich and could be hosting his former North London rivals Tottenham in the Champions League. What a story that would be. And could Wenger repeat what Jupp Heynckes did at Bayern Munich when he came back to the club on a temporary basis and led them to the Champions League? Something Pep Guardiola never managed to do at Bayern Munich. So interesting one to keep an eye out there. Europa League, we're going to be talking more about it as the hour goes along. There was one game yesterday. It was confusing that at 3:50 yesterday afternoon, a Losers Cup game was going on during a Champions League evening. But anyway, Arsenal were out in Portugal. The reason is because if people didn't know the location of where Guimarães is in Portugal, it's very, very near to Braga in the north of Portugal. And Braga are obviously in the Europa League tonight against Besiktas. So as you'd expect, neither side can play on the same night. So that's why Arsenal had to play yesterday. The reason why it was so early is so that it didn't clash with the Champions League. Obviously, you have a 5-6, 2 5-6 kickoffs, and then 6 8 o'clock kickoffs. That's why it was even earlier and even more ridiculously early than we would expect. Arsenal did go 1-0 up through Skodjan Mustafi, but conceded a late equaliser to make it 1-1. Arsenal still looking fairly comfortable. They're on 10 points in Group F after 4 games. 4 points clear of Frankfurt, who travelled to Liège this evening. Liège are on 3 points, Frankfurt on 6. So it seems like it will still be progression for Arsenal into the knockout stages, but the pressure ramps up on Unai Emery. The feeling is, if Leicester were to give them a drubbing on Saturday, which I think it is, that there's a good chance that Leicester will comprehensively beat Arsenal, could that be the end of the line for Unai Emery? Will we be here on the Monday Premier League Fan Show talking about a new manager needed at Arsenal? We had Harry Simeu from the Chronicles of Aguna podcast yesterday saying if it were up to him, he'd get rid of him now. He wouldn't keep him until the end of the season. He'd make that decision now. So how much pressure is Unai Emery coming under? If you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll have news at 2 o'clock of Gareth Southgate's latest England squad. It's being announced at 2 o'clock for the qualifiers against Montenegro and Kosovo. We're going to be talking more about the Europa League action to come tonight. Manchester United are at home against Partizan Belgrade. But up next, we'll be talking all things Wolves.
Love Sport.
So we're going to be looking ahead to tonight's Europa League action. Wolves are at home against Slovan Bratislava. And to talk all things Wolves, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Richard from Wolves Fancast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Richard. Things have changed quite dramatically in the Europa League in the group stages for Wolves. They lost the opening home game against Braga, back-to-back away games, and suddenly the group looks a lot better for Wolves than it did after just one game.
Yeah, it's funny how things turn out. I think one of the things about Wolves, especially in Nuno, is actually that we're almost set up to play better away from home a lot of the time, and especially with how we kind of started the season a little bit inconsistently in the league. The back-to-back away games almost suited us in a way because it allowed us to sort of build back onto our foundations. I think one of the big key things with Wolves, and it kind of goes under missed by a lot of probably the mainstream press, is actually that we are, in theory, a very defensively solid side, and that is what the foundation of the team is all built upon in terms of being very tactically structured and organised. So the games against, especially Besiktas, really helped us with that. And then Bratislava, it was a bit more of an open affair, and they needed to really turn it on second half to sort of, come out of sort of third gear and kind of get the 2 goals in the second half. But it was a much better performance, and it's put us in a real good ascendancy for the second half of the group stage.
You mentioned the reverse fixture a couple of weeks ago over in Bratislava, and Wolves had to come from 1-0 down to win 2-1. Is that a sign not only of the kind of character of this Wolves side, a sense of resilience, but also how seriously Wolves are taking it? Because there's probably no point in Wolves qualifying for the Europa League if they're not really going to take it seriously. But they they had a commitment to making sure they got back in it, and they could have easily, away from home, kind of slipped away and fallen away, but they kept going at it and eventually took all 3 points.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the main things about Wolves under Nuno has been that, you know, underlying belief and philosophy that actually if we're only one goal in it, it doesn't matter who we are against. It doesn't matter if you're against the Man City or, you know, whoever, that they will have belief that they can get something out of the game. And, you know, sometimes it's probably potentially waned at the start of this season, like they've almost settled for a draw. But the amount of games we've kind of come back from 1-0 down to draw or go on to win is actually really good. It's not great that we're conceding that first goal because it puts you at a huge statistical disadvantage. But, you know, they have that belief that it doesn't matter that, you know, at what point it will come, that, you know, especially in the second half of games, they're, you know, so prime fitness-wise that we might not come out of the block firing. But a game of football's 90 minutes and it doesn't matter when you get that goal sometimes. And, you know, we've caught a few teams off guard, and I think we did the same against Bratislava by getting goals straight after half-time when they might be a little bit more switched off. You know, especially with the Bratislava game, away from home. A lot was talked about the attendance situation and, you know, the slightly bizarre atmosphere that was driven by that. And for us to go somewhere like that, concede a goal the way we did, but to then come out second half with the, you say, mental resilience to get the victory, I think, you know, really impressive.
How do you think, Richard, Wolves are dealing with playing, obviously, Sunday, Thursday, having to play a lot of weekend games, follow-up and midweek? That's only going to continue into December in particular, when, obviously, over the festive period, the fixtures just come thick and fast. It seems like, at the moment, that they're dealing with it reasonably well. You look to the performance on the weekend against Arsenal, a 1-1 draw that could have really could and should have been a Wolves win. Do you feel like they're getting better and better at it the more and more, the kind of further and further we get during this group stages?
Yeah, I think that the team are adapting to it better. I think at the start of the season, it was a little bit of a struggle and that first win wasn't coming as quickly as I think we'd have hoped. The performances were there or thereabouts. And, you know, we had a couple of odd off results, so to speak. So, you know, when we got beaten quite handedly by Chelsea, that really wasn't a Wolves performance. And even like, you know, that isn't like even how we go about losing games. We lost to Everton. In, you know, again, not really how we tend to go about games. So they've really kind of worked out how to adapt on it. Got to remember, a cool amount of these players were playing in the Championship 2 seasons ago, where the games come just as thick and fast. You know, you're playing an extra 8 league games, plus you've got cup games as well. So a lot of the players are used to playing this amount of football. And I think for them, it's just getting the right players in. We've been fairly fortunate up until now, until Bolly's injury, that we've had a pretty consistent lineup. I think in, you know, the first half of the campaign will be over by January anyway, but fingers crossed we do go through to the knockout stages, and I think the club will be hoping to sort of get a few more reinforcements for the second half of the year to sort of make sure we can maintain a positive form on all fronts.
It was interesting reading some of Nuno Espirito Santo's comments in the Times actually today, saying, talking about Ruben Neves, that he needs to become more consistent, perhaps adding more goals. It's kind of scary to think or to remember that Neves is only 22. He captained Porto in the Champions League at the age of 18. He was a star right from the outset, from a very young age. What do you make of those comments from Nuno Espirito Santo? That is that just a way of G-ing up to re-energise, re-motivate his players? Or do you think maybe that he does have a point, that Neves scores some absolute screamers, but maybe actually he does need to contribute a little bit more in order kind of to go on to that next level and be regarded as an even better central midfielder?
Yeah, I think, to be fair, I think Nuno's probably sort of pretty much on the money there. I think from the outside looking in, people see the wonder goals. And don't get me wrong, it's a pretty impressive catalogue of them. But apart from that, he doesn't always impose his influence in games in the same way he was able to in the Championship. And he's somewhat got away with it compared to other players, just through the occasional, you know, 25-yard curler, which, you know, don't get me wrong, is pretty satisfying to watch as a fan, but the performances haven't always been there. And sometimes, you know, the formation hasn't particularly helped him out, given those moments, and kind of give him the space to operate in. So it's particularly when we play three in the middle, he usually sits a lot deeper. He can't, you know, almost sort of play those raking passes and kind of get forward as much as he would like. But against Arsenal, when we changed the formation and, you know, he was in those, you know, he was playing about 15 yards further forward, he had a bit more space to operate in and he looked really good. And, you know, it's clear that he is an incredibly talented player. And actually, he's got all the tools in his locker to make it at whatever level he wants to be. You know, he just needs to find that bit more consistency in his game and find the, you know, just the right position for him almost on the pitch to make sure he's as effective as possible.
And just one final one then, Richard, looking ahead to tonight's game. A victory this evening will take Wolves within a point of qualification in Group K. Are you confident after the displays in the second and third games, after the disappointment of the opening defeat at home to Braga, that the Wolves can get the win today and therefore the pressure is off a little bit, because in those final few games, Wolves only really need points to secure qualification, which I'm guessing, Richard, would be kind of a real achievement for Wolves, that in their first season in Europe for decades and decades, just getting through would be a real, really positive step forward for the club.
Yeah, I think the aim probably at the start of the season was to get through to the knockout stages. Whether we kind of go out in the next round, it's almost a bit of a so be it. But I think for the club, the minimum target was to progress out of the group stages. When the draw was made, I think, you know, there was a good amount of optimism, you know, around kind of the club in terms of where we could finish. And I think it's sort of shown that it's a fairly tight group. You know, we've all sort of taken points off each other. So there is a confidence that we can go through. As you say, we need 4 points from the next three games in theory. I think with Bratislava, I think the theory is, you know, we've beat them away from home in a venue that is very much catered towards the home side. So actually, we've overcome that hurdle. So playing them at home on our home ground should be really good for the team. So I think a lot of fans are expecting the win tonight. And, you know, against Braga as well, we played really well. And it was one of our better performances of the season up to that point. And it was a shame we lost and probably deserved to be a draw. So, you know, I think, especially, again, playing away from home against someone like Braga, you know, I think they'll be expecting to, you know, get at least a point from that game. Then hopefully if you're in a position where we've qualified again, you know, with coming up to playing Besiktas, hopefully we're in a position where we can either have a bit more rotation or the pressure's off them a little bit. But yeah, I think everyone's really confident going into tonight.
A quick prediction then, Richard, what do you think the score's going to be?
I think it's going to be 2-0 Wolves.
2-0 Wolves. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Richard. That was Richard from Wolves Fancast giving his views on Wolves' home game tonight against Slovan Bratislava. It did start slowly for Wolves with the opening game defeat at home to Braga, which would have been kind of when the balloon deflates, but back-to-back away wins in Besiktas and in Bratislava sets it up, which means that if Wolves win tonight, they'll get within a point of qualification in Group K with two games to go. So Wolves are at home against Slovan Bratislava in Group K. Another of the English sides in action tonight is Manchester United. They're at home against Partizan Belgrade. We'll be talking all things United next.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. As I mentioned, one of two English sides in action tonight in the Europa League are Manchester United. They're at home against Partizan Belgrade. And to look ahead to that game, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jamie Jackson, Manchester football correspondent for The Guardian. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jamie. Obviously, Manchester United beat Belgrade 1-0 a few weeks ago. It wasn't exactly the greatest game of football to watch. A win for United in tonight's game will carry them through to the knockout stage. Obviously, that's the main aim for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer tonight. But in particular with specific players, what will Solskjaer be mainly looking for tonight? Which players will he be looking for a big performance from?
Well, I mean, about that game you mentioned in Belgrade. And yeah, it wasn't a great performance. Martial is someone who I always think he needs to play well. He obviously scored the penalty that day or that evening. And as you said, it was our game. So you know, he mentioned again in the build-up, you know, he sort of, it's interesting how this has gone, because he's now become the number nine. For a little while, Rashford seemed to fancy that berth, but now it seems he wants to play wide. And basically, when those two click, as I think you saw, particularly, was it the third goal at Norwich, which ended in a chip, back heel from Rashford, chip from Martial. You know, when they click, it looks good. But it is all a little bit tenuous. Other players to look out for, I like the look of Brandon Williams. Will he play at left back again? He probably will. You know, it's very early for him, but he looks like he could be a player, like a proper player, what I call a proper player. And when Luke Shaw comes back, I'm not saying he's going to keep Luke Shaw out of the team, because he's yet to start in the Premier League, I believe, Brandon Williams. But, you know, there might be a little bit of competition there, which is handy for them, considering Ashley Young is basically coming to the end of his career. And then, you know, Lindelof's injured, Pogba's not there, so we may look at Garner again. He played well. I was impressed with Garner in Belgrade, because that was a hostile crowd at the Partizan Stadium, and he played well in the sort of holding role. But as you say, I mean, it's about winning, really. I mean, you know, Partizan, when they beat them, was to start three wins on the trot, all of them away, which they badly needed. Then, of course, they lost at Bournemouth, so I think he just wants to win tonight. You know, and then they'll qualify, won't they, with two games left. I'll tell you what, I mean, you never know, dude. It's football, but it's kind of why we love it. It wouldn't surprise me if he goes deep into this competition. And suddenly, once you get to the quarterfinals, I think Mourinho used to say, once you get to the quarterfinals, players start to smell, you know, that phrase, winning a trophy. And it could be the Champions League that's true. It's a long way off, but he's definitely eyeing it.
You mentioned Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial there, Jamie. Is it kind of as simple just to say that Rashford's confidence is starting to get back? Is that because of the return to fitness of Anthony Martial, or is there more to it? Because in the weeks that Anthony Martial was out, Rashford looked a bit impeded by an injury. His confidence was low. He wasn't taking on shots and wasting opportunities that he should have been scoring. But do you see that return of Martial? People have been making a lot of that partnership between the two of them. Is it too simple to say that Rashford's confidence has been restored by that return of Anthony Martial to the team?
I think it's helped, and I think Ole Gunnar would like to think that's the spark. But I think with Rashford, there's a deeper question mark or issue, which how you just described him there, you know, sort of having a lack of confidence, and then, you know, it's sort of returning when Martial's been back at the team. It's kind of how I would describe his United career. There's been patches where he's looked world-beating, amazing, as we've also seen, you know, for England. And there's been other patches where you think, crumbs, has this player sort of peaked, flatlined at sort of 20, 21? I know he's now 22, but you understand what I mean? And is he not quite? Because what we're talking about here, to play for Manchester United, really, you have to be on the level, or what they need is, you know, an Aguero, a Bernardo Silva, a Firmino, who I know doesn't score loads, but needs to play for Liverpool. You understand what I mean? Sadio Mane, this is what they need in the forwards. And, you know, Rashford looks to have the raw materials. He can finish when he wants to. He's got the pace. But, I don't know, has he got that sort of consistency? That's what he's yet to find. And Martial, I'd probably say, is in the same bracket. If you ask me a slightly different question, who do I think is the better player? It's an interesting one. I think it's Martial. But I think together, you know, they are a good partnership. But I think Martial, for me, is their... Yeah, basically, they haven't got many, but they're sort of best... The best of their forwards, and a player who could, but that's a big word in sport, could be kind of as important to them as Paul Pogba, who I know can also be patchy, but he is easily their best player. And what was interesting until the Bournemouth defeat, Kieran, was they won those three games I mentioned without Pogba, which is a good situation to be in, because what it meant at that time before they lost at Bournemouth was they're on a winning streak without the best player. He comes back, and you know there's a bit of competition there. I'm not saying he doesn't get in the team, but that's what Solskjaer needs. I expect them to sort of beat Partizan this evening. And, you know, I'm at the Brighton game on Sunday, beat them and go on another little run, because I think he does know what he's doing. I think there's going to be bumps in the road. And what I liked about the winning run of three was it looked like there was a plan again. When we're sort of off the boil and drawing, you know, and not winning, losing, sorry, it just looked... not great, but then that performance against Liverpool for me was the one that drew, because suddenly you thought, actually, look, that's Liverpool, probably going to win the league or certainly go close. And I know they're at home and they're Manchester United, but in the context of post-Ferguson, that was a very good performance, believe it or not, even though it was only a draw for them. So I think there is something there, and it's about consistency. He keep on saying it, because it's true. He does need time. This team needs time. It's a young team. If you actually look at what they're trying to do here, they're rebuilding a whole team. You've got two or three players, De Gea, Pogba, maybe the two that we mentioned, Martial especially. But then it's all sort of ifs, buts. Rashford, Pereira looks like he could be a player. McTominay's starting to... they're building, not from scratch, but you understand what I mean? It's a long-term thing.
One alarming statistic, Jamie, for Manchester United fans is the fact that United's percentage chance conversion in the Premier League is just over 10%, 10.28%, which is the fourth worst of any team in the Premier League. People have been documenting the lack of creativity in midfield, still the defensive issues there, but that's really quite shocking for Manchester United fans, that there may be a lack of a real master creative midfielder that's pulling the strings. But actually, the fact that United aren't really able to score that many goals, they waste a lot of opportunities, perhaps is their biggest problem at the moment?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think it's 13 league goals in 11 games. I mean, crumbs, that's almost a sort of relegation threatened side's return, isn't it? Just over one a game. And you're right, and this is kind of where if you look at Spurs, they're a better team, don't get me wrong, but because Harry Kane is so lethal, you don't need me to tell you, that's what kind of... But what wins games, isn't it, if you've got a goal scorer who puts away basically not every chance, but most of them, and that's kind of what they lack. And so, yeah, you're kind of right. They do need more creativity, but I do think, as your start that you've mentioned there proves that they're just not scoring enough. And I know Solskjaer, sort of behind the scenes, is kind of working on it, and is a little bit not exasperated, but is ruining all these missed chances. I mean, they've missed a hatful of penalties, haven't they, as well? This season, relatively speaking, I don't know, is it four? Which it has cost them, the Wolves game, and there's a couple of others. And this is kind of why I went back to, or why I mentioned Aguero and Mane and Salah, as being lethal. Aguero is just phenomenal. I think Salah and Mane got 22 each last season in the Premier League. I mean, United, would kill for just one player who could score 20 plus in the Premier League. They've got a couple at City. You've got Sterling, who got 18, and Guerra got 21. That's what does it for you. You need two players, really. They're scoring 40 between them in the league. The strikers I'm talking about, or anyone. And United, I don't know what their top scorer has been recently. Was it Ibrahimovic 1 year? But I don't think he got 20. And that's Ibrahimovic, who has been a top player. And this is kind of the nub of it. So let's wait and see. I'm really fascinated to see how Martial and Rashford go, especially Rashford this season, because you keep on waiting for them to sort of, especially Rashford, to sort of, make the breakthrough and hit click, and suddenly, yeah, he is a 20 Premier League goal a season, man. And maybe it's going to happen this year, I don't know.
It was interesting to hear Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's comments on the January transfer window. Seemed quite coy, saying that they could sign one signing, two signing, but perhaps saying that the summer transfer window is the better time to do it. If you think back a few weeks, Roy Keane, I don't think he was joking when he said this, but he said, why don't Manchester United just go and get Harry Kane? Now, considering Tottenham at the moment are in a bit of free fall, they're in chaos at the moment, as kind of as much as Manchester, or perhaps not quite as much, but in a similar situation as Manchester United, where top four, it looks like a real push this season. Why shouldn't a club like Manchester United, even in the situation they're in, one of the biggest clubs in world football, you've just mentioned there how they would absolutely kill for a 20, 30 goal a season striker. Why shouldn't United test Tottenham's resolve, especially if Tottenham don't get in the top four, test their resolve next summer and just say, here's £200 million for Harry Kane?
Now, listen, you're preaching to the converted on this one. I think United need to be definitely more bullish in the transfer market. So I completely agree with you. They need a little bit of that sort of Roy Keane stance, that you're describing there, and kind of what you're saying. I completely agree with that. I mean, please don't tell me, if United, that the reason you don't do more of this is because you're concerned about being seen to publicly miss out on a player. Because I would look at it the other way. Show ambition, go for a Kane. If you don't get him, obviously try and get him, but maybe I would be looking at it as a sort of strategic thing where you're actually saying, yes, we are Manchester United. We're not concerned about going for a big player like that and not getting him, because it's a statement of intent. And you mentioned basically the magic figure there, 150 million to 200 million pounds for a player like him. I think they could get someone, you know, for that money, and away you go. I completely agree with you. I was saying this about 2-3 years ago when Dele Alli looked like he was going to be a top, and I mean a proper top player. Why don't they just try and go get him? Maybe his moment, not past, but he needs to sort of prove it again. But so yeah, I'm with you on that one. You know, and just on the January market thing that you mentioned at the top of this card, what happens there is they have a list of, I don't know, let's say 3 or 4 positions, you know, two or three players for each position. They try and get them, you know, in the summer. But if one of those players I mentioned it becomes available in January and they can get him, then obviously you will do. The only other thing that can happen is a sort of left field thing. Yeah, say Harry Kane wakes up tomorrow and decides he's not, you know, declares he's not happy at Tottenham and he wants to move in January, you know, something like that. I mean, that's a bit of an extreme example, you understand what I mean? But yeah, I mean, it is really a summer thing. They're sort of coy about January just because they don't really, I don't know, they can work January signings, but they've not had a great experience, have they? I'm sure Sanchez was a January signing. There's no reason why it shouldn't work, but the point is, often players are available in that month of January because, you know, like Sanchez at Arsenal, it's not going particularly well for them and etc. So, you know, they might pull one out of the bag in January, but I'd be staggered if they got sort of 3 or 4 main players there.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Jamie. That was Jamie Jackson, a Manchester football correspondent for The Guardian. United are at home in the Europa League tonight. They play Partizan Belgrade. They beat them 1-0 a few weeks ago away from home in what was a very drab contest. United know with a win tonight they will qualify for the knockout stages of the Europa League. And it's an interesting one, asking Jamie there about the striker issue. I mentioned 10.28% is United's percentage chance conversion, the fourth worst of any team in the Premier League. It's quite clear, yes, there are talented, inconsistent young talent like Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford and Daniel James at the club. But what I mean, people have been talking about they are in need of a creative spark, someone like James Maddison in the Premier League or looking other leagues, someone like potentially Donny van der Beek at Ajax. They're in need of someone who can pull the strings. But as much as anything, what that statistic tells you, if they had Sergio Aguero, if they had Harry Kane, if they had Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, United's situation would probably be quite a bit better than it is at the moment. And that is the question. Roy Keane said it and everyone thought he was joking. I don't think he was. Surely, especially with the plight of Tottenham, where they're going, they're in chaos. I don't care what happened last night beating Belgrade 4-0. Tottenham are still in chaos and there is still a lot wrong at that club. And I don't think they'll get anywhere near finishing the top four. So United aren't going to, but Tottenham aren't going to either. Why shouldn't United test Tottenham's resolve? Say, here's 170 million for Harry Kane. See what they come back with. Yes, Daniel Levy's probably going to be a pretty nasty negotiator and a pretty tough negotiator, but why not put the money? This is Manchester United, one of the biggest clubs in world football. They have the money to do it. Why wouldn't you put it on the table and say, here's 170, here's 180 million pounds for Harry Kane and see what Tottenham come back with? Because Tottenham may be a better team than Manchester United. Manchester United are a far bigger club than Tottenham and their ceiling is a lot better than Tottenham's. Tottenham have reached their pinnacle of finishing top four season in, season out. They can't win trophies with what they've got. United, if they get it right, and there are so many things, they need a new manager that's not Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They need a new director of football. They need a director of football that knows the club and knows football very well. They need their transfer business to be good over the next few years. But there's a much higher ceiling for Manchester United. That's the point I'm getting at, than Tottenham. And why not test Tottenham's resolve with a bid for Harry Kane? And would Harry Kane move to Manchester United? If you have a view on that, call us on 0808 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We're going to focus a little bit now more on the Premier League side of things. Talking about Aston Villa, will Jack Grealish and Tyrone Mings be part of that England squad that's announced in about a quarter of an hour's time? Also talking about their League Cup tie against Liverpool that will go ahead in the middle of December, with Liverpool playing on the 17th. And then 22 hours later in Qatar, in the Club World Cup. So we're talking all that, as well as their next game at Wolves on Sunday. We're talking all things Aston Villa next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Aston Villa now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Max Stokes from the Villa on Tour YouTube channel. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Max. Before we talk about matters on the field, let's talk about Jack Grealish and Tyrone Mings. The England squad is announced in just about 10 minutes' time at 2 o'clock. Tyrone Mings was in the last England squad, obviously had to deal with the racist abuse, and I thought he dealt with that so maturely, so professionally on his debut. I mean, it's ridiculous to even be saying that. Are you expecting not only Tyrone Mings to be in this England squad, but Jack Grealish, who Gareth Southgate has watched quite a lot in recent times?
I don't think there's any question. I think Tyrone Mings gets in there, no problem. Like you said, that Bulgaria game was not what anyone wants to go through on their debut. And like you said, I think the way Tyrone dealt with it in terms of during the game itself and the way he spoke after the game was just an absolute credit to himself and Aston Villa. I think he'll be in there because I think Keane has had a difficult start to the season. Even Maguire hasn't had the best season so far. So I think he'll be in there. I think he'll be partnering Maguire. I don't see why not. He's a left-sided centre-back, left-footed. We don't have too many of them, so I don't see why he shouldn't be in there. In terms of Grealish, I think he should. Like you said, Southgate has been watching him a lot in recent weeks. You saw that fantastic performance that Grealish had against Brighton, where he just ran the show. Even at Man City, he had a good performance, whereas, you know, at the Etihad, it's not always easy to have a good game, and he did. So I don't see why not. I don't think there's many players like Jack Grealish. He has had a... slight issue with an injury this week on his calf, but I think he'll be back for our Wolves game on Sunday. So I don't see why he shouldn't be in the England squad, and I don't see why he shouldn't get a game.
Looking back to last weekend, Aston Villa's last two games have been the two toughest games you could face, against Manchester City and against Liverpool. Against City, for the first half, really, Aston Villa were right in that game, and a lapse in concentration just after the second half started kind of then cost Villa as it all just kind of then went away. Against Liverpool, Villa were leading for a lot of the game up until the 87th minute from about the 25-minute mark. So even though it ended up in two defeats for Villa, do you take positives from both of those games against the two best sides by quite some way, by an absolute mile really, in the Premier League? The Villa at times during those games actually acquitted themselves pretty well.
Absolutely. I think we've got loads of reasons to be proud from those both two games. I think in the Man City game, that first half was probably one of the best halves of football I've seen this season. I think defensively it was so good. The organisation was brilliant. The players, you know, barking orders at each other. They were just really passionate, and they knew what their jobs were. I know that the goal in the Man City game, I think it was like 30 seconds after the restart, after half-time, which was the worst time to concede a goal, really, because then all the things Dean Smith had said at half-time kind of unravelled, and then Man City just showed their class and scored. But on Saturday against Liverpool, I thought we were really, really good. I don't think Jack Grealish was such a massive miss in that game, because going into the game, you knew it wasn't going to be easy, and if you were going to get anything out of the game, it was going to be on the counter-attack. So I don't think Grealish is going to have the biggest impact on the game when you do only have 25% of the ball, which I think we did. So I don't think it was a massive miss. I think it was a good decision to rest him for this Wolves game. But there were so many positives in that Liverpool game as well. Trezeguet was fantastic. He was just running endlessly. Wesley didn't score, but I think he had a good game running, closing down the defence. He even gave Van Dijk a good game, you know, world-class centre-half. And I think, you know, Wesley just bodied him a little bit. Obviously, he didn't get a goal, like I said, but he was really, really good. I think there's so many positives. I just think it was just a lack of concentration, really, at the end. Two pretty simple goals. I think the cross on Mane is sensational, but, you know, we made that happen at the back post, and then from a set piece, the winner was scored, which isn't ideal, because I think we defended really, really well. And if we play like that in most games this season, I think we'll be absolutely fine.
This must be a bit of a difficult question for you to answer, but in terms of Aston Villa's best or most important player, I mean, probably the two names that would come into contention would be Jack Grealish and John McGinn, kind of both in the centre of the park. Is there perhaps a different answer to those two questions in terms of who is the best of the two and who is maybe the more integral player to Villa's overall game?
Well, that is a tough question. I think both players are completely different players. You know, you look at Grealish, he's a flair player going forward. He's got the skills, he's got the dribbling. John McGinn is just absolutely sensational. I've talked about it before, the way he just uses his body and the way he's able to dribble the ball and take us from one end of the pitch to the other. I think they're different players. You know, when either of them don't play, I think we lack a little bit, but we lack different things. You know, when they both play, they just sort of click and they complement each other so, so well. But yeah, it's a tough one because they are two different players. I know they play in similar roles on the pitch, but the way Grealish sort of glides from left to right, forward, back, whereas McGinn is more of a tenacious, aggressive player. They both offer different things. They've both got a class shot and then they both score goals, assists. But, you know, when you don't have either of them, it is a massive, massive miss.
Looking ahead then to Villa's next game, it's away at Wolves on Sunday. Obviously a bit of a friendly or not so friendly rivalry between the two. Do you think Villa can take advantage of the fact that Wolves are obviously having at the moment to play Sunday, Thursday, obviously with the Europa League? And how tough a game is that going to be on Sunday for Villa? Or can they take the positives from these last couple of games against City and Liverpool into that game on Sunday?
Yeah, I think if we can take the positives from those two big games against City and Liverpool into this Wolves game, I think that's going to be really good. It is a tough one to call. Personally, I don't really think it's a derby. There is a bit of a rivalry there, but I think, you know, Wolves are making it bigger than they probably should since they've been quite good for the last 3 years. They've piped up a little bit more. But I think, yeah, there's a lot of positives to take. In terms of the game, I think Wolves are missing Bolly at the back. And apart from that, I don't think they have a lot of height at the back line. So hopefully Wesley being 6'3", Mings 6'5", Engel 6'4". Hopefully we can take advantage of the set pieces there, because I think Trezeguet's goal against Liverpool at the weekend was the first set piece we've actually scored. So we really do need to work on them, take advantage of Wolves' lack of height, kind of. But in the first half of pretty much all the games this season, we've been so, so good. I don't think we've conceded a goal on the road in the first half this season, which is so, so good. I think we just need to keep it up for 90 minutes, because in the second half, we do throw it away, which isn't ideal. But first half, we always, we pretty much always seem to take the lead. And then it's the same story in the second half. A lot of times, like we saw at Arsenal, we sit deep, invite the pressure. But I think if we can, you know, keep up the positives for 90 minutes, and there's a lot to build on there. And yeah, I think it's going to be a tough game at Wolves, away game. They'll be up for it, we'll be up for it, the fans will be up for it. So I think I'd probably take a point there. And then after the international break, we've got a big, big game against Newcastle. So I'll probably take a win there. 4 points out of those two games, I think most Villa fans would probably take that.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Max. That was Max Stokes from the Villa On Tour YouTube channel. Obviously talking quite a bit there about Jack Grealish. As we mentioned, the England squad is announced in 4 minutes' time at 2 o'clock, which we'll be covering in the next hour. And it is believed that some reports are suggesting that Grealish could be called up for the first time. That is the indication. James Maddison should also be in the squad, obviously, after the casino controversy that we're not going to keep dragging up from the last international break. Obviously, Tyrone Mings was included in the last squad. Aston Villa could have three players, actually, in this England squad: Tom Heaton, Tyrone Mings, and Jack Grealish. So could be that. Can't remember the last time Aston Villa would have had three players in an England squad. If you know the answer to that, call us on 0208 7020 558 to tell us when the last time Aston Villa had three players in the England squad. It's probably going back to when they were actually good, would probably be the answer to that. But we'll have the latest from the England squad announcement. Gareth Southgate is set to have his press conference in the next few moments. England are at home against Montenegro on the 14th of November and away at Kosovo on the 17th of November during the international break. The final round of Premier League fixtures before that break are coming up this weekend.
This is Love Sport.